You have described yourself as an amiable, low-voltage atheist. Here's a Faustian bargain, which even atheists can understand Faustian bargains. If Old Scratch offers you a deal and says, George, you have to give back the Cubs World Championship, but if you give back the fact that the Cubs broke this 108-year curse and they now are champions of the universe, if you give that back, you can get a better candidate for president than Clinton and Trump. Would you do the deal?
Yes, because Rizzo's 25, Bryant at third base is 23, Russell at shortstop's 22. Cubs are going to do it again next year.
Right, but we don't get to do it again next year for choosing a new president.
That's the problem. Stuck with these guys for 4 years.
Okay, so what do you think, because again, I lose sleep over it. I know you do. Every American, I think, has. What is the most optimistic outcome coming up on Tuesday, 3 days from now?
The most optimistic outcome is that Hillary Clinton wins. She has no honeymoon period coming up because we've never before in our history had a major party candidate go into the election considered dishonest and untrustworthy by a majority of Americans. This year we have two of them. She's elected with a narrow margin. She faces a Republican House and a Republican Senate, which is the best thing that could happen to her, because then she can turn to the left wing of her party and say, I'm awfully sorry, but all that stuff that I committed to when I was running against Bernie Sanders, there's no way I can get it through the Congress. So-called free college, $15 minimum wage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Free preschool.
Yeah, and all that stuff. So therefore, she has to bargain and she has to deal, and we get back to something resembling politics as normal in our complicated democracy. That's the best outcome. And since the American people are very reluctant to give any party a third consecutive term in the White House, six times since the Second World War, parties have tried to extend their hold on the White House from two terms to three. Five times they've failed. The only time they succeeded was the Republicans in 88 when the country really wanted a third Reagan term and settled for George Herbert Walker Bush. So she would go to 2020 asking the country for a fourth consecutive term. The Democrats have an extremely difficult Senate lineup in 2018. They'll be defending many more seats than the Republicans.
Yeah, they're defending 25,
correct,
and we're defending only 8. I mean, we should be able to increase our Senate majority in 2018.
So the long and the short of it is the ideal outcome, and by no means is it good, but the best we can hope for would be 4 years of a stymied bargaining Clinton, at which point she disappears. The difficulty for the Republicans is, if Donald Trump is president, there will be no conservative party. And a political idea without a party is an orphan in a cold, inhospitable world.
Let me lay out what I consider to be the worst possible outcome, and then you tell me yours. And the worst possible outcome, I wake up this morning and look at Nate Silver and Nate Cohn and other people not named Nate who are handicapping this race. And this becomes a real possibility. The worst possible outcome is a 269-269 tie.
Yes.
Because Mr. Trump ends up taking that sort of stray congressional district in Maine.
Yes.
And then it goes to the House of Representatives, assuming, I think it's very likely, Secretary Clinton wins the popular vote. So you have an election that remains undecided, potentially for months, and domestic unrest and a complete erosion of any kind of confidence in our democratic system of government.
Well, I'm not sure, A, what you're describing is mathematically possible, but highly improbable. But stay with it for a minute. The House, as your listeners may know, each state delegation gets one vote, which means Wyoming has as big of a say in this as California.
Right, exactly.
Which I kind of like. in judging from the outcome that's likely in the House elections this year, that would mean that the Republican candidate would be elected. By the way, they don't have to. They could pick someone else. They wouldn't, but it would be the next president's either going to be Trump or Clinton. But I think that's really not apt to happen. The most important election in American history in world history, with the 1800 election in this country, the first time in world history that power was transferred peacefully by democratic vote from one party to another, the Federalists yielding to the Jeffersonian Republicans. And that, by the way, was done in the House. So because we hadn't passed the
vote. Yes, well, because of Aaron Burr's interference with it. But you don't want to compare Trump and Clinton to Jefferson and Adams, do you?
I certainly do not. Thanks for clearing that up.
Yes, that would be making news. George Will compares the candidates in 2016 to the candidates some 216 years ago. Mr. Will, right now, whether or not Mr. Trump wins, the Republican Party is going to need to rebuild and regroup. And I think everybody agrees on that. Are there lessons that our party can take from the rebuilding accomplished by Theo Epstein at the Chicago Cubs?
Well, that's a lot easier, a smaller market. The Republicans first have to understand this is not, in any meaningful sense, the center-right country that Republicans have assumed is. That is, you notice the leader of the most conservative party, the Republican Party, is against any entitlement reform. Entitlements are 67% of the federal budget and growing as 10,000 more baby boomers retire into Medicare and Social Security every day. The budget is being swallowed. It will eventually disarm us by taking all the money needed for defense. Hasn't talked about it. The biggest threat to the constitutional order of the country is rampant presidential power. The unilateral executive actions taken by Barack Obama, both Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Trump say, well, they like that. They just plan to do it even better than Mr. Obama. So the constitutional equilibrium of the country is in jeopardy. The entitlement structure is rickety and threatens to put our economy in a kind of death spiral. So the things that Republicans care about, conservatives care about, are simply have no spokesman. Take trade, for example. What are you saying when you say you're a protectionist? Mr. Trump wants to raise our taxes. That is, a tariff is a tax imposed at the border. A tariff is the government saying, protectionist government saying, we, the government, are going to decide what people can import and consume and at what price and in what quantities. That's what's called industrial policy, and it's a traditional aspiration of the left, not of conservatives. So the conservatives have to step back and understand the sweep and breadth of the repudiation of conservatism in this presidential campaign.
One of the signature phrases that Mr. Trump has used in the campaign is, I alone can fix it. And your colleague Michael Gerson at the Washington Post, in a passionate editorial today, passionate column today, talks about that being the very opposite of conservatism. What should the Republican or conservative motto be?
The conservative motto should be that the Madisonian architecture of our Constitution is right. No executive can act alone. Congress can't act alone. The point of our architecture is to force people to compromise, to split the difference, to slow down gusts of public opinion, to temper opinion by filtering it through representative institutions. It is supposed to be difficult, and it is supposed to be slow to make the government work. Therein lies our safety. And conservatives have to turn around to the Republican base and say, when you get mad at us because we can't repeal Obamacare from Congress because the president has a veto, understand that that's the way the framers designed this system, and over time, overall, it works on our behalf.
Well, this is so important for people to understand. In the brief time left to us, in terms of rebuilding a conservative party, what's the most important priority in the next 4 years?
The most important priority is first to change the tone of the Republican Party. There are just certain things you cannot advocate at the top of your lungs, constitutional government being one of them. Cheerful, amiable persuasion is another. You know, Earl Weaver, the great Hall of Fame manager of the Orioles, said, baseball's a game you can't play with your teeth clenched. It's 162 games. It requires a kind of emotional equipoise, tranquility and relaxation and concentration. And the politics of a democracy is the long politics of patient persuasion, and it requires a different tone, particularly as regards the fact that the Republican Party is now, election after election, trying to win power by getting an ever larger portion of an ever smaller fraction of the electorate, that is, the white electorate. And until the Republicans talk in a welcoming way to people who are not white, the Republican Party is in for what Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina has called a demographic death spiral.
This is undoubtedly true and profoundly important.